Hello, and a very warm welcome to today's show entitled Virtues, Values, Ethics and Morality. My name is Magla Pillay, and it is my honor to introduce to you today Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raj Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for several decades. Sister Denise, very warm welcome.
Thank you.
The format of today's show is the Socratic Method. And for those of you who do not know what that means, I'll tell you. It comes from the word Socrates, and it's the philosophical method of systematic doubt and questioning of another to elicit a clear expression of a truth supposed to be knowable by all rational human beings. We will be taking up a wide variety of subjects that is related to morals and ethics. We will also be questioning some of the world's conventional views on these matters, and we will analyze and dialogue today's topic as well as other topics in order to gain a greater insight and uncover new foundations as to how we formulate our value systems. And we see that in the world, everyone is concerned about doing the right thing, but paradoxically, people keep on making wrong decisions, which leads to more sorrow. So, Sister Denise, very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
The topic that I thought of taking up today was that of the origin of virtues. Now, on a different day, we will look at the definition of the other topics, but let's look at your definition of virtues. How would you say this differs from values, ethics, and morals?
It's interesting. Most people think values, virtues, ethics, and morality is all the same thing. But I've thought about this at great length, and I find that virtues are really substantially different from ethics, morality, and values. The virtues originate in the divine, in God. Virtues are qualities that are universal. They are not decided upon by people. Ethics, values, and morality is something that people think about, they decide about, and they say, this is a good thing. Virtue is different. It's not something that is decided upon. It's something that's more discerned. And what would be a virtue? For example, fearlessness is a virtue. A person who has the virtue of fearlessness, what is wrong with fear? Why is it not a virtue? Is because it makes a person do an action against their conscience, right there. Fearlessness means that a person has the courage of their convictions, and they will be able to remain true to themselves, true to their principles, because of that virtue of fearlessness, which is a part of their personal power as an individual. Take another virtue, kindness. You see, if a person has the virtue of kindness, they will show that virtue in all their dealings. You cannot say to a person, you have to be kind or you're not allowed to be kind. You know, with values, ethics, and morality, there's all of this should, have, do, must, ought. And so they're prescriptive.
Sorry, say that again. Should?
Should, have, do, must, ought. These are the modal verbs, which are very, very connected with these teachings that people give each other. You have to do this, you can't do that, You ought to be like this. Why are you not like that? This kind of thing. A virtue is like a fragrance coming from a person. You can't make a person have a virtue that they don't have. You can't stop a person from having a virtue that they do have. So virtues, I compare them with fragrance. And I think that the origin of virtue is God. So that virtues, I would find all over the world, in all the cultures, very easily recognizable by anyone from any culture. Whereas the values, the ethics, the morality, that is very changeable. They change over time. They change according to the age group a person is in. They change according to culture. Virtues are much more like the divine. They're changeless, they're universal, and they're recognizable anywhere. And so I feel that when we look at the comparison of the origins of virtues and the origins of ethics, value, and morality, we see something very, very different in terms of the origins.
Your answer was extremely stimulating. As you were speaking, I couldn't help but wonder, virtues... I have to rephrase this. Is somebody born with virtues, or do you learn them? I want to answer that question. I want you to answer this question in this context. I'm not a patient person. I'd like to be, but I was born impatient. Everyone around me knows that, but I'd like to be patient. So I want the virtue of patience. If you're not born with it, are you doomed for life? Can you learn it?
You can learn it. Looking at the source, now the source of virtues being God, the divine, the supreme being, when you contemplate upon that being, upon that energy, through that contemplation, you're able to actually absorb that virtue into yourself so that it is something that can be acquired. You can also acquire virtues from other people. You see a person who's patient, you observe them, how they are, how they do it, how they put it into effect, where they use patience, where you would be impatient. You observe that. You are able to actually absorb it from another person by observing it and by keeping yourself in their company, because company colors a person, and you can do that.
The world that we're living in is such that one sees a lot of people who conduct themselves in a manner that's not virtuous, and yet they're successful. And so somebody looks at themselves and says, if in this situation, if I were to be honest, I would lose out. Whereas if I behave in a dishonest manner, I've got something to gain. So this show is not about philosophy. It's about practicality. How and why would somebody be motivated to put a virtue into their practical life when, if they conduct themselves in such a manner, they would stand to, on the face of things, lose more than they can gain?
Well, this is exactly the key to the answer when you said on the face of things. So superficially, they stand to gain, but it's superficial. Short-term, temporary. And because it's so superficial, short-term and temporary, it doesn't have that substantial quality of the real. And so why a person is interested in virtue, why they cultivate and develop virtues, is because they understand the long-term, the consequences of virtue are that you're always at peace with yourself, you're right with your conscience, you are accumulating fortune of a special kind, not just materialist fortune, but the fortune that comes from having good relationships with people as a result of virtuous conduct. You see, You're creating credit for yourself with people. You're creating credit for yourself with the divine, credit for yourself with nature. And so when you're thinking about these things from a spiritual angle, you're thinking about yourself as in the time span of eternity, I see. Think about being, you know, you gain something at somebody else's expense. That means you're putting yourself in debt. Sooner or later, that debt comes up to be paid. And then you have had your short-term gain, but what you have to pay, what you have to give, is much, much more than the little bit that you gained. So it's really all about looking at things in terms of the long term. So that means you have to really think of yourself as a soul, as a virtue-based soul. You see? Because then you're thinking about yourself in what we call the three aspects of time, the past, the present, the future. There's a continuum, you see. And to be in that continuum means that you're deep down, stable, in your self-respect, in your power, and your conscience is clean and clear, and that is really worth having.
So Denise, my attraction to spirituality is the fact that you do yourself no harm, nor do you do anyone else harm. Is a virtue if it harms somebody? And by that I mean if somebody asks you for your honest opinion on their brand new decor and you think it's hideous and you say so. Is honesty if it actually hurts someone's feelings? What are the parameters of a virtue? How do you define it?
There's a saying that if you tell the truth with anger, it's not the truth anymore. Mm. Because you pollute it by being harmful. And so a polluted virtue is not a virtue. It becomes a vice. And so people have different criteria for the word honesty. You know, and honesty is a word that's very much connected with ethics, morality, and values, because someone's definition of honest can vary enormously from somebody else's definition of honest. So I would say that when we're looking at the word honesty as a value, an ethical principle, an aspect of morality rather than a virtue, then we have to also look at, okay, what are the foundation principles of my criteria for values, ethics, and morality? When we're looking at virtue, then it's something different. I would say that being real is a virtue. Being honest is a value. And we will have to spend some time looking at values based on materialistic criteria, on particular criteria of particular religions, and then values based on the principles of spirituality, which is another whole discussion.
Mm. And is there a place in this day and age for virtues? It's not some, if you look at how an individual lives his or her life, he gets up in the morning, tends to himself, tends to his family, gets himself to work, goes about his day, and the vast majority of people on the planet do not think or spend that much time looking at themselves or this entire subject of virtues and values. Why has virtues become important suddenly, that there's a need that you and I have to have this discussion? What is its relevance in this day and age?
The word virtue is an old-fashioned word.
Mm.
The word virtue, we tend to associate it with Puritanism, this kind of thing. And people don't use the word virtue much these days at all. But I'm very keen on the word virtue because of its similarity with flowers, with fragrance, with beauty, with naturalness, with something that is quintessential in nature, and something that corresponds to an ideal which is outside of the variation of all the values and morals that are being touted at this time. And because virtues are of an original nature rather than a temporary nature, I think that we need to try and bring them back into fashion, as it were.
Yes.
And this is why.
It has gone out of fashion, hasn't it? So how would the ordinary person bring back virtues? If I wake up today and I decide I wish to become a virtuous person because I realize it will work for me in the long run. How do I go about becoming such a person while still being real, while still being practical, while still living, as it were, in the real world?
Well, you look at some of the different virtues. There's so many words that correspond to the idea of virtues. Sweetness, gentleness. In a way, it's the things about a human being that make them vulnerable, but that also make them beautiful. And the world today is so much of a fight that you have to fight to survive. So many people are in survival. When people are in survival, you know, the virtues tend to get put aside because people are in an antagonistic relationship with life. Virtue brings you into a relationship with life that corresponds to something fragile, like a primrose, you know, a very small flower, very beautiful. But what do people do when they see fragile things? Because of the way the world is at the moment, they break it, you see. And so people have to be protecting themselves from that. So the virtues can't flourish in that kind of soil, you see. So we have to give substance, give strength to the cultivation of virtues so that they can flourish.
Sister Denise, if you're in an environment that's not actually conducive to your own virtuous progress, and I like what you just said now, that when you're virtuous, you're also vulnerable, but it can be perceived as a weakness, okay? How would you become a virtuous person if you are trying to grow in spirit in an extremely hostile environment?
I have an idea which I can share with you of how a person builds their stage. Building your stage means what kind of a substantial person you are from within. So at the bottom of your stage, your foundation, I would say, are the original qualities of the soul that are purity, peace, power, love, and bliss. And on that foundation, in that soil, you cultivate your virtues. But because you're in a hostile environment, you need to have the next layer, which is the spiritual powers. And I think that when you draw light, power, substance, strength, real strength from the divine or God, that is what allows you to develop the virtues, because you're not weak. And then it doesn't matter whether you're perceived as weak or not, because you're not. When people are weak and they develop virtues, that gets easily smashed because the person's weak. So I think that the process of developing oneself in terms of virtue has to take place simultaneously with developing oneself in terms of power. So we have this whole question, it's a very tricky question of empowering the self personally.
So if one decides that you're going to walk the spiritual path and you want to become a virtuous person, do you as a beginner apply thought to it? Do you wake up today and decide, today I'm going to bring out all my kindness and show kindness to whoever sees me? Is virtue a is it theory? Is it verbal? Is it action? Is it a habit?
I think it's all these things, and I think virtue is something that you cultivate. This is why I keep on mentioning this analogy of flowers. You know, when you want to make a garden, and you can think of the reference that is very often made to Voltaire's book Candide, the French philosopher from the 18th century, he, after all is said and done, came to the conclusion that the most important thing in life is to cultivate your garden, which means cultivate the garden of your character, which means virtues. If you're a gardener and you want to make roses, lilies, orchids, whatever it is, you have to care for them, you have to give them sunshine, water, love, all of these things. So it's really about doing this for yourself.
What you just described requires a certain level of ambition, because this seems to be a lifelong thing, not just a 1 or 2 day thing. One either has an ambition to do something or you don't. How would one cough up ambition to become the person that you just said? Because what you just described sounds like painstaking work, emphasis on pain. How does one get there?
Well, it's about success, isn't it? You know, the people, when they're young, they're encouraged to tell, okay, when you grow up, what do you want to be? And they're taught that it's about your career. It's about your impact in the world. It's all about doing. It's not really about being. Even though the question is, what do you want to be? The real thing that's being asked is, through what method do you want to earn money so that you can say that you're a successful person because of your command of money and social influence and all of this? Now, what we're doing here is we're saying, what do you want to be is not what do you want to do. What do you want to be is, what kind of human being are you? People don't really know themselves, because the culture that we live in mitigates against it. Now, when you start to think, okay, who am I? What kind of person am I? That really brings you back to the values, the virtues, the qualities of spirit that you express when you are conducting your affairs and you're interacting with people and so on. What quality of person? You want to be a high quality person, a good person, a person who is very happy that they are themselves, you know, which is a new way of thinking, because it's so different from the materialist view that, well, you have to, you know, if you don't do something that's financially rewarding, then you don't have any value as a person. And we're really challenging that idea.
Sister Denise, say in case you encounter a person called Deborah, who is an exceptionally angry person, but she's watched the show and she's now inspired to become somebody who's peaceful, and peace is a virtue. But the compulsion of her anger is such that it just explodes out of her, usually at the most inopportune moments. So simply a decision to be a virtuous person is not enough. It can't possibly be enough, because most people want to be good. Most people want to do the right thing. Most people want to uphold the best in themselves. And yet they find that their own personalities and their own dark side overshadows or is a kind of like a backwash and pulls them in the opposite direction.
Definitely.
And so they lose the battle within. How does one win that battle?
Well, we embark upon the work of cultivating oneself. You see, I am a work in progress. I am the most important thing. You see, the culture that we live in says, don't be selfish, right? The messages that we get, which is why I have a real issue with conventional ethics, morality, values, because these approaches that we're surrounded by mitigate against a person developing themselves as a fundamentally virtuous person. So, when you want to do this, it means you're in many ways up against a current that is, you know, that the world is moving in this way and you're going in a very different way. And say you are an angry person. Well, how did that anger come in? That anger came in as a reaction to all sorts of hurt that you experienced. Anger is not a fundamental quality. It's something that is a secondary emotion that is provoked by some damage that you were subjected to. This is why a person is angry, and then you have to go deep and deep and deep and see, okay, what is it that you are so angry about? Very often people don't even know. So they have to do a lot of deep inner work. And when they do that, then they also start to discover these foundation principles of purity, peace, power, love, and bliss that are just wiped out, empty. They're devoid of these fundamental powers. And so they begin to realize, no, I have to build myself up by building these up. And where do I get these from? The source of those is the Supreme Being. Without communication with the Supreme Soul, you cannot get strength. And without strength, you cannot make virtues. It doesn't matter what you do. It won't make any difference. But what you make yourself, what you absorb into yourself, that's what gives you the ability to actually cultivate your garden.
It sounds that someone has to be extremely motivated to pull off what you just described, because none of that sounds remotely easy. Because what would you say to that? For somebody who has tried to be peaceful but abandons it because it's so difficult, what would you say to that person?
Well, they say easy come, easy go. So things come easily, they go easily. But someone who, you know, systematically gives attention to themselves to make themselves into something that they are really proud to be, of course it's not easy. And nothing worthwhile is really easy. I mean, when I started to study Raj Yoga, which is the spiritual practice that I do with the Brahma Kumaris, the reason I did it is because I heard it was difficult. Because I thought if it was easy, it's not worth it, you know. Because if you want to be expert in something, you have to be prepared to put in effort. You have to be prepared to put time on a daily basis, and with that time and effort, you will surely become skilled. It's a matter of doing it regularly and working on it.
Okay, I think that's all we have time for today. Thank you, Sister Denise, for an exceptionally stimulating conversation, discussion. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. And what we would like to see you do is to take this conversation further to where you live, to the people around you, and see if you are also interested in finding out what the origins of virtues are. Thank you very much for joining us today, and goodbye.